Kia ora and welcome to Rugby Stories Playmakers. This is where we catch up with the legend of the game, someone, a character, and talk to them about their story in rugby, whether it be about games, individuals, or just general chat about their career in the game. And today, my privilege, I couldn't wait to get this one started. Brendan Laney is joining us on the show. And Buffer, I'll start there because we start with Buffer. We've got Chainsaw. We've got all sorts of things, mate. Hey, great to have you with us. Are you a little bit nervous given the fact that I probably know a little bit more about than a lot of other people?
Yeah, I must admit, I was when Ross Carl said that you might have been doing an interview, I started sweating a bit. But, mate, it's cool. I must admit, I never thought I'd be sitting here getting interviewed by you, so yeah, it's quite a privilege for me as well, mate.
Is that about you or about me?
Gosh. Hey, I'm just glad you passed the ball to me.
I'm pretty sure you passed the ball to me plenty as well. Look, we're going to talk about some glory days, of course, and we shouldn't forget, and a lot of people I don't think have looked deep into the fact, you know, you played 20 tests for Scotland, you played international rugby, but that's not where I'm starting. I'm starting with the fact you're actually deep down a good Southlander.
Yeah, yeah. My dad was a policeman in Bluff, and so I was born in Invercargill, and most of my mum's side of the family are all from Invercargill, and still are.
When you're growing up there and you start thinking about it, and these are the amateur days, and we're very blessed the fact we got to play in the amateur and professional era, but when you're going through and you're playing rugby down there, is the vision for you to go to the big smoke, because I was in Invercargill and I'm thinking Southland second division, maybe one day I'll play in the first division. Was that part of the dream?
Look, to be fair, when I first started playing for South Canterbury, I was still at school. So playing for South Canterbury was a big for me. Probably very much like yourself, you know, you were at high school and played for Southland, and I thought that was the biggest thing in the world. So to be fair, to go away and play, down in Dunedin was never really on my radar. I was just so stoked to be, playing for Temuka, my club, and then obviously to get picked for South Canterbury was just such a big thrill. So I thought I was King Dingaling playing for South Canterbury, mate. I thought it was fantastic. Rightly so, it was a great province to play for, and I'm really proud of that part. To even think that I'd end up playing in Dunedin for Otago with the likes of yourselves and so many other famous guys, no, never even crossed my mind, mate.
So what happened?
To be able to say I did it.
So what happened then? Cool. I mean, where was the conversation? Where was the link? And when all of a sudden was, you know what, I need to get in the car, and by all accounts, the Toyota Corona gets a run down to Dunedin, and then all of a sudden you're in the big smoke, because that's what it was. It was like, for me, the big smoke. Yeah. I've been to Dunedin plenty of times. What was it that brought you there? And who was it?
I got a phone call one day. I was still playing for South Canterbury. I got a phone call one day from Dewey Simmons, who we know well, who was our manager for Otago. And there was a Sevens team going to Sri Lanka. They asked if I was keen to go, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm keen to do that. So away we went to Sri Lanka, and Arthur Stone was coaching. Coach was a loose word. Stoney was on the trip. But fantastic Rooster, like just a top man, and I got on really well with Stoney, and on that trip he said, would you be interested in coming to Dunedin and maybe having a go at rugby down there? And like I said, I'd never crossed my mind to go and do that, but the opportunity was just too good not to have a look at. So I remember going down and meeting Stoney, and also I remember going down and meeting up with Arthur Kinnaird, and having a good yak to them as well, because Zingaree were pretty keen for me to go and play for them. But I picked Kaikarai, which I'm so glad I did. They're Kaikarai Demons. And I headed down in my Toyota Corona, which it looked like someone had stolen it, and it was pretty beat up. It's all I could afford. And away I went to Dunedin. And I remember rocking into town on a Sunday night, and I went and stayed with my uncle, my dad's brother, and he was a chief of police, traffic officers at the time.
Yeah.
And he worked in the same office as Gordy Hunter. So I got down there about 5 o'clock, and he said, tomorrow morning at Hubbard State, Monday morning, you've got a meeting with Gordon Hunter. I went, what the hell have I got a meeting with Gordon Hunter for? He goes, you've got a meeting with him, so you better get down there. So I remember going down to Gordon's, or Mr. Hunter, I don't think I called him Gordon, went down to his office, parked the car in the car park, and waltzed into his office. And I remember sitting in there absolutely packing it, and he had a wall planner, big wall planner, and instead of months, it just had positions. And in every position, he had about four or five guys. And I remember, I was thinking, remember it, you know, your name was up the top, right wing, Jeff, and Mark Ellis at centre. And of course, I was playing centre for South Canterbury at the time. And there was Mark Ellis, Phil Gordon, Jason Wright, three gaps, and my name. And Gordy didn't even say much. He said about four things, and he said, "You want to be up here, lad?" I went, "Yeah, I do." And he goes, "Okay, well, you got to work hard. See you later." And that was it. So I went back out to the car, and I had a ticket on my car because it didn't have a warrant of fitness. I was in the police car park. So, yeah, great start.
So you get there. You get, and Mark Ellis is there. And, of course, then Mark goes off on one of his journeys, and he goes and plays rugby league. And it gives an opportunity, yeah, as he did, well, but for all of us, let's be honest, we're a lot safer for it. But you think you get an opportunity now, and so you're playing centre. How did things sort of evolve as you started to get more experience in that Otago environment?
Well, like I said, when I first got there, Macca was around, and I only played like a handful of games that first year. I remember standing outside JL there, John Leslie, my first game, going, "What the hell am I doing here? Like, this is just crazy." But, you know, I it was very much a case of having to prove myself. And it took me a sort of couple of seasons to get into a position where I felt, not comfortable is probably not the right word, but just felt I would deserve to be there. And we were probably going through a wee bit of a transition phase with Otago at the time, where we had a few guys, that, you know, particularly around Aaron Penney and Jamie Joseph, you know, Mark Macca as well, Steve Bishop, they were all sort of moving on and going on to other things in their career. So we had a lot of new guys and younger guys coming in the team, as you know. So, and I was probably one of those guys. So it took a wee bit to find my feet.
1998 was a significant, you know, moment for Otago rugby in the professional era and us as a group of players. But what was special about that group of guys for you in 1998, that championship winning side?
Look, to be fair, sort of went back to a bit to 97 where we didn't have a great year. We sort of finished the year well, but we didn't have a great NPC. We went into the Super Rugby part of it. No one, in fairness, was expecting a lot out of the Highlanders at the time. Tony Gilbert took over. We had a core of guys there who were, I suppose you would say, unknown within reason. And then we obviously had a good Super Rugby season, made the semi-finals, which, once again, no one was really expecting. And some of those guys really put their hand up to become All Blacks later in the year out of that Super Rugby. But then we moved into NPC, and it just, I don't know, just something seemed to click, didn't it? And I suppose the stars aligned, and it was just a bunch of guys who were, A, enjoying each other's company, B, playing a style of rugby that we all loved. It was all about working really, really hard at training. We played really, really hard rugby, and then we played up afterwards. So we enjoyed that environment together. But, you know, we had to front, and that's one of the things the guys really did. Well, there wasn't a heap of superstars, and as you know, even the guys who were the superstars, they certainly didn't walk around like they were superstars. That was the cool part about their target team.
You're a superstar on all fronts, you know that, though. Whether it was before the beginning or the after, mate, you're a standout. I mean, that's why you're an icon of that team and of that group of players. And look, there were so many storylines in that season and so many things, and the fact that, you know, we took a hiding from Auckland, and then you're thinking to yourself, OK, we need to turn this around, you know, like that was never going to be good enough. And then we got on that roll. And, you know, I remember the sense that, you know, when we went out there to play and we got to that point of quarters, semis and finals, there was sort of like there was nothing that was going to stop us. And we started playing some rugby, which I could hardly believe at the time. That's the nature of it came to. But you were having an unbelievable season, and everything you did was just amazing in terms of decision-making, and then all of a sudden the chainsaw comes out more and more. You know, we start seeing it more and more, you know, and we start wanting to see it. Romy Ropart, he starts kicking the ceiling and he starts going from town to town. I mean, where did that come from? The whole chainsaw. Who's responsible for that?
Well, you know, I remember the Auckland game we talked about because I got dropped for that one.
Lucky you.
I remember watching Matty Carrington on the wing going, I'm never going to play again. And luckily enough, I got the opportunity. But I remember it was Ruben Parkinson. He started it all because I remember Cookie, and obviously you were playing with Cookie as well, and I was lucky enough to have a few games with Cookie. What a champion. You know, like played 100 games for Otago, but he obviously had the Jammy Jam Club. And Ruben, I remember Ruben talking about it and saying, oh, you know, we should start that back up. And, of course, I was laughing. Oh, yeah, whatever, mate, good on you. And then nothing really happened, but I remember it was a mayoral elections. Do you remember that? I remember walking out. I remember talking to you about it. We were on the field. It was a midweek game. I'm pretty sure we played someone like Bay of Plenty or something. And around the side of the ground at Carisbrook, there was signs, and one was Suki Turner for mayor and whoever else was going for, and then there was one that had chainsaw for mayor, and I'm sure I turned around to Goldie, you, and went, is that you, mate? And you were like, wasn't bloody me, nothing to do with me. So and that's how it sort of started, and the students got a hold of it, and I was in a pub one night, obviously having a Fanta, And I bumped a guy by accident and bumped his drink out of his hand. And I said, geez, I'm really sorry, mate. And he said, oh, no worries, chainsaw, yeah, all good. I said, chainsaw, what the hell are you talking about? And Ruben Parkinson heard that, and he played it up and played it up. And so for the rest of the season, he kept on making me try and – he said, I'll go and stand over in the goal line like a piece of timber and, or a tree. You cut me down and all this sort of carry on. So it was his fault. Totally his fault. And then I don't know whether I was smart enough or dumb enough to do it. Probably dumb enough, and I did it, and it stuck.
Yeah, it stuck. But in 98, you know, went to see Carisbrook being full, and, you know, the nature of the way that it played out, and the celebrations we experienced afterwards for the next number of days, because that's how long it went on. I mean, those are memories for me that, I, you know, that I'll never let go and that I'll never forget. And it brings that group of players together, and when we had that reunion a couple of years ago, it was something special, right?
You know, there was a real core of guys, you know, particularly like Anton and Simon Mayling and John Blake, all lived together, and, you know, the guys got on so well, and it was off the paddock, and I think that sort of helped us on the paddock, because we just seemed to play for each other and work hard, and yes, okay, we were a wee bit lucky in a couple of things, but, you know, I think you make your own luck too, and it takes a bit to win it. To win an NPC is, you know, some heaven. We were lucky enough too. So, but we had some fantastic players in the team too, you know. Like, there was always that chat about who was the best there, and, you know, I think the unsung heroes in our team were likes of your John Blakeys, your Brendan Timmins, your Ruben Parkinsons, who didn't get much limelight, but gee whiz, how good were they that whole year, you know?
Yeah, and for John Leslie as well. I mean, the impact he'd had, you know, across the generation, and then he heads off to Scotland after that game, and he goes over there and expands his career. Are you talking about Simon Mayling, the lock or the loose forward? Because in a final, when you're thinking the biggest stage, to have your lock perhaps come on off the bench and not know where to pack down in a scrum is concerning, right?
Well, and I think that was one of my highlights of the whole year, to be fair, Goldie. And I remember we talked about it after the game. But I remember I was on the right wing, obviously, looking at this pretty clear as a bell. And I remember Crusher went off, Josh went off, because he hurt his collarbone. And yeah, he was pretty sore. And he got bashed around. And to be fair to Simon, he hadn't played a lot of rugby during the season, particularly not at flanker. Most of it had been at lock. So I remember he came running on the field, and it was just close to half time, and he packed into a scrum, but instead of packing on the flank, he packed on the lock. And I distinctly remember Tane Teapot tapping him on the shoulder and pointing him where to go.
Who's a guy who's been in the middle row his whole career? He doesn't know where a flanker goes when it comes to scrum time.
I felt sorry for Don. He's the only guy that can make number ones look untidy for a start. But he, like, honestly, it made the man turned into be an All Black. He was an outstanding rugby player. But, yeah, he had a few issues that day finding where he was meant to put his head.
Yeah, so, look, we get to this point, and you've had a career that's grown with Otago Rugby and the Highlanders, but then there's a change of tact, and all of a sudden the opportunity becomes overseas. What was the motivation for you in regards to leaving New Zealand, but also what did you see overseas that you maybe weren't going to see back in NZ?
Well, I'd got to 80-odd games for Otago. I was really keen to get 100. It was actually one of my goals when I first went down there. That was something I was really keen to do. To become a centurion of a province was pretty special. And, you know, not a lot of people got to do that. But the opportunity came up to go overseas. I'd sort of been on the bench a bit in Super Rugby, and that wasn't because of performances at all. It was just there was some other guys in front of me who were better. So, you know, I had to take that on the chin a bit. But I just looked at it and thought, I want to play. And the opportunity to go overseas to Edinburgh, which was something I never thought I'd do. I was only a young fella from Temuka. So to be able to have that opportunity to go and do that was just too good to not look at. I'd just got married to Miranda, my wife, and we were both maybe keen to have a look overseas. Admittedly, I didn't get to see a lot of the opportunities that she did because I was involved with rugby. But, you know, she got to go and see the whole world over there, and that was one of the things we were really keen to do. So the opportunity to go to Edinburgh was just too good to give up, and I loved every minute.
But it opened up an opportunity for the next level, didn't it? The fact that all of a sudden you had lineage with grandparents, that all of a sudden Scotland came on the radar. And, look, there was a lot of chat when you arrived and being available. And, look, one of the guys that you know, I looked up to, it was Gavin Hastings, and I know you respected greatly, was very vocal about this. And you could probably in some ways understand a little bit, right? The fact that he's going,
totally.
You know, players who are playing here, who have dedicated their lives, have grown up here, is it going to deny them the opportunity? But when you did get your chance, I mean, there were some special moments. And how did you feel about it initially and then post that career with Scotland?
Well, look, I didn't go over knowing I was eligible for Scotland. I know that sounds silly, but I only went over knowing I could work in the UK, and that gave me the ability to be able to play for Edinburgh. So I got over there thinking, right, I've got to bed in, get myself used to playing for Edinburgh and enjoy myself and enjoy the rugby and, you know, prove that I'm good enough to be here. So after 2 days, I'm getting a phone call and getting told I'm off to Perth to play against for Scotland B against the All Blacks, and I'm standing there with 21 guys beside me that I didn't know, trying to sing the national anthem, which I hummed, and then I'm standing in front of Paul Miller and Simon Mayling and you know Tom Willis, who's captain in the All Blacks, and they're doing the haka, and I'm just sitting there going, wow, this is just bizarre. We finished that game. You know, the All Blacks won. Finished the game, we had a shower. I walked out of the shower and just about to go in the change rooms and the Scotland manager. He came up and tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, look, we want you to play against the All Blacks on Saturday at fullback. I was like, whoa, slow down here on a minute. This is what's going on here. You know, the first thing that went through my mind was, hell yeah, I'm all over this. This is great. But in hindsight, and going back to what you said about, you know, Gavin and a few other players who played for Scotland, the decision to put me in so quick was wrong. They shouldn't have been done like that. But I was never going to say no.
No,
you know, I was into it. You know, to be able to face the All Blacks twice in a week and you know, only be playing in a final with the guys, you know, 10 days beforehand, was just amazing, really. And I still scratch my head a wee bit about that sometimes, how it all happened. And look, I copped a lot of stick over there that first couple of weeks, or even, and to be fair, Goldie, it went on for about a couple of years, to the point I got sick of it one day and said, look, we stop whining about it, it's been done, let's get on. And, you know, we copped a lot of stick. And I felt probably more for Miranda than anybody because I got pretty thick skin. I just get on with it, but and I could do something about it with playing rugby. But Miranda was sitting there going, what have we done? Have we done the right thing? You know, everybody hates you here because every 2 minutes there was something in the paper. So it was bloody tough. But I was lucky. I had a couple of guys over there, Martin Leslie and Toddy Blackadder, who were outstanding. Martin in particular, he was bloody good. If it wasn't for Marty, which is JL's brother, I probably wouldn't have survived as well as I did.
So did you feel as though you were accepted by the end? By the end of that stint you had with
them? I think I've got there.
I think I've got there, mate.
Look, at the end of the day, I sort of sat back and thought, well, the only thing I can control is playing well. I was lucky enough to play all the test matches in the Six Nations in my first year, which was unbelievable, really. I still scratch my head over it and pinch myself. You know, I remember my first game was my second game. I'm standing there and we're playing England in the first Six Nations game at Murrayfield, 68,000 people. And I'm pinching myself going, oh, I'm from Temuka. What am I doing here?
You and Temuka.
This is nuts.
How many times are you pinching yourself through your career? And this is what makes it legendary for me. I mean, when you start talking about this, the fact you keep coming back to Temuka, I'll drag you back to Invercargill and Bluff eventually. But, you know, in the end, you're talking about this and you're talking about, you know, you score, you know, equal 100 points in 9 games. You equal Hastings' record. And then you score 24 points in a match for Scotland. You know, this is fairy tale stuff in theory, right? You're looking at here going, you may not have got that chance for the All Blacks. You know, I mean, you must look back at that and you know what? I proved I was good enough to be an international footballer. And is that the way you feel about that experience?
Probably more now than what I did when I first finished Goldie.
Yeah.
Because it did take a wee bit to... I still couldn't believe I was there after playing 20 test matches. But after sitting back, and now I'm an old man with fat guts, and sitting down having a cold beer, I'm actually really proud of what I did. And there's a lot of guys who've had fantastic careers, and you know, have done some amazing things. But it's probably more when you do sit down and do think about it, and you go, wow, actually, I was really lucky to do the things I did. But I wasn't the main goal kicker. Let's be honest, you know, like when I first turned up at Dunedin, I was hacking them all over the show, and you know, then next minute here I am kicking goals for Scotland. And the only reason I got that is because Chris Patterson in the Italian test missed a few, and I was like, no, mate, give me, I'll have a crack.
Yeah.
And I ended up kicking 24 points. So. And then I got the job the next week, and then the week after, and the week after that. So I just kept on doing it. I was really lucky. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that I got to 100 points as quick as I did. Because, as you know, test match, you know, getting picked in a test, you can be one day a rooster, the next day a feather duster. So it was pretty cool.
It's great to hear you talk with such pride about the fact you got the opportunity to play for Scotland. How does that explain the fact, though, you're quite happy to dip into your pocket and be the first lining up at the bar? Because when it comes to a round, it's never an issue. Usually the first one's in front of us. I mean, how important is that to you, the social side of the game? How was it to, important is it to you then and now?
I don't know. I played rugby because it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I love playing with my mate beside me. And I love looking at my mate in the eye after the game and clinking a glass and going, mate, you play well today, or playing against whoever I marked that day. I remember doing it with Eric Rush. Rushy, you know, one of the best wingers we had in New Zealand rugby, New Zealand Sevens legend. And here I am after a Super Rugby game, clinking a beer with him and looking down, and he's got rugby boots on because he forgot his dress shoes, you know, like... Things like that. Oh, we would never have done that if we didn't have an after match, you know, that sort of thing. So I love that part of the game, and I hope, I know that the club rugby side of things is getting tougher and tougher, and they're trying to keep it, that social part. But it is, I think it's a very special part of rugby, and something we did very well and have done well in New Zealand. So I think it's got to be there, and I think... I've got to savour that because it's pretty special.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure, Buffer. I've really enjoyed listening to you, as always. And it sounds as though we need to catch up for a beer sooner rather than later.
Top man, Goldie. Love to have that beer, mate. you're a champion. I really enjoyed it. Thanks. Nice talking to you too.
Thanks very much, mate. Well, that's another episode of Playmakers here on Sky Sport. Coming up next week, Dougie Howlett is the man that we talk to. Of course, the legendary All Black and player here in New Zealand. But coming up, stay with us. Afterwards, after this right now, we're going to look at the 1998 final. I know Buffer's going to stay tuned.